Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Oh, leave it out, you slag! Only joking, leave it in, but give it a wipe down afterwards. I'm Jack Beaumont, aka the Delicate Man's Leslie Grantham, aka Ricardo. Moto Mick is in town for episode 8. Or whatever number this is. This is the point where Series 1 ran out of puff. I'm glad to report there's still more to come of Series 2. Who is your daddy? Yeah, thought so. Have a jingle. Oh, what a cut.
I'll go as Mick.
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 So did you want to kick off with some... was it biking you were into, wasn't it?
So, yeah, like, growing up, I, at the age of 8, started racing dirt bikes. From there, I was introduced to a world of, well, a lot of dodgy people, to say the least. I mean, if you're into dirt bikes, you've got to be a certain kind of person. And then to go and race them in a field in the middle of fuck knows where, you have to be a different kind of person.
Yeah.
It's also considered a full contact sport. So when you're around them sorts of ages, you've got the dads who are fucking crazy, training their kids to be like pit bulls. And a lot of violence was...
So the dad's having scraps?
Dads were having scraps, kids were having scraps. I mean, a lot of racing, you know, it was full contact, basically.
Is it kind of like Ben-Hur with the chariots, where people like kind of...
Kind of, bro, yeah. I mean, kind of. And I mean, growing up with that sort of mentality around people who were ready to do that sort of thing, you had to be one of the people who could compete.
Yeah.
So you had to compete off track as well. So I mean, when that comes down to...
You couldn't say, yeah, I'm up for the race, but I don't fancy the scrap afterwards. You had to go with the hand.
I mean, truth of it is whether you fancied it or not, there was going to be punches flying.
Yeah.
And that was from the kids and the dads.
And is that something that they're actually having disagreements over things, or is it just like, no, we had a race, now we're having a fight?
Sometimes it could just be some sort of feud that would come on from, oh, you done this way back. And
yeah.
Even though it was considered a full contact sport and a lot of people would nudge it off and just say, that's racing and this is this kind of racing, a lot of people would take it into fisticuffs. I mean, on the track and off the track. I mean, I got into a lot of trouble because we actually, as I started going on in the years, maybe at the age of 10, I was doing a series of racing inside large stadiums, which is called Supercross. And I got into
at the age of 10, you say?
Yeah. But. Yeah, so we was travelling up and down the country, some of the biggest stadiums. And that was when I first started Supercross, which is a completely different kind of dirt bike racing. I got into a lot of trouble because I took that sort of mentality into that. Mm. So I had a coming together with someone on the track. And as we were coming off of the track, I kicked him off of his bike in front of lots of people.
Yeah.
That didn't go down well. So, I mean, that was the only place it didn't fly. And I mean, to be honest, as the years went on, I raced until I was about 21 on the dirt bikes. So much went on. Do you know what I mean? There were so many fights and it was just part of it. It was just part of the fact that you were racing this highly competitive sport and seriously dangerous machines, doing seriously dangerous jumps on loose surface, and it was just part of it. And a lot of the people were travellers, and that's part of the culture, man. Yeah. But I mean, like, things would be settled. You wouldn't just have disputes. They would be settled sometimes. And then, I mean, that sort of mentality went on with it. And then growing up like that, I mean, didn't have me in good stead for normal life. Going to school was not, you know.
Yeah. If you go to school, you just had a fucking 60 jab wire.
Exactly. And then, you know, you've just had a fight with three people, and then his dad wanted to come and beat you up with a fucking hammer.
Mm.
And you know, you're dealing with that on the weekend. You go to school and someone gives it, and yeah. you get you, your mentality's that way. It's not going to fly. And you're in primary school.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the age of 10. Like, and you've got, if anyone touches me, I'm going to touch them.
Yeah, yeah.
Mentality, which, what you know, isn't helpful in normal life.
Did you see any people get really seriously bad injuries?
Racing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see. To be honest, it's no laughing joke. I see people pass away, and I see friends pass away. So, I mean, it's one of them sort of things. It's dangerous by nature, and I see a lot of people get very badly injured. I'm talking compound fractures, bones coming out, skin. I see people get paralysed.
Did you ever get a serious injury?
Yeah. Yeah. I've broken, I think, about 18 bones in my body in the times that I was racing, but like I said, growing up with that mentality also meant that I applied that to everything in life. So if I was jumping my BMX, or if I was running down the road, or fucking yeah. around in the woods, I had as many injuries off of my bike as I did. So
yeah,
you know, and I mean, to be honest, I've had I had one fracture in my back from racing bikes that could have paralyzed me forever, and I was very young. I was about 11, and yeah, I mean, I carried on racing after that for a lot of years.
How long were you out of action for?
So being that young, I was out of action for 3.5 months.
Your body heals so quick, didn't it, when you're that long?
Yeah, and I mean, I was going to the chiropractor a lot, and also there's something very interesting in the high sports realms that's available, which is laser healing technology. So there's one guy who specializes in healing bones with lasers,
right.
and you go and pay, and a lot of top sports people go and do it, so that helped a lot. So to be honest, my recovery was a lot quicker than it should have been. When I think back to it now, because it was so competitive, I didn't have that balance for normal life, do you know what I mean? So when it comes to breaking the law, I mean, I knew you know, I knew my parents broke the law. I knew my granddad broke the law. I knew both my granddads broke the law.
Yeah, yeah. So what kind of law breaking were they getting up to?
So we can say that it was two different sides, two different families. Yeah, so one of my granddads was away for quite a long time for importing tons upon tons of He was one of the biggest scores, I think, the customs found back in the day.
Is it? Did he break a couple records?
I think he did at the time. Yeah. And I think there was a very famous man who beat his record shortly after.
Okay, I think
exactly the guy. All right. Yeah, so, I mean, on the other side, that's, you're talking about just London crime. You know,
organized crime.
Late '60s. Yeah. yeah, you know, you know what sort of thing was going on back then. Yeah. And then, you know, generation after that, you know, football violence, drugs, more and more, and it just filtered down. I suppose it wasn't that I was ever taught, and I didn't know about it till a later age, till my granddad went back to prison for importing loads of fucking.
What age roughly did he go back for the second time?
The second time.
Because he would have been a granddad, so I'm thinking, was he a comically old age when he went back the second time?
he weren't no young man, that's for sure. I mean, yeah, on the other side of 50. So, not to be too specific.
Mm.
So, I mean, yeah, I knew that holding the rules was not anything to really do. I was never taught to follow everything.
You come from a long tradition of rules getting bent.
Rules getting bent and broken, man. And to be honest, I mean, I suppose I calmed down.
Yeah.
I mean, I calmed down in terms of, you know, when I was young, I had a very different mentality, and it was a lot worse. So, you know, as I've gotten older, I've had my own experiences. It's been been a different way of growing up, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, I suppose you learned the hard way.
The fucking hard way, bro. I caught many beatings, you know, from a young age. I mean, yeah, people's dads, like I said, people's dads came for me in racing, you know.
How is a grown man in that world justifying coming after a 10-year-old kid?
So I wasn't 10 at the time. This guy I'm talking about, I was, let's say,
yeah.
Me and the guy had his son had a coming on the track. Like, so we hit each other. He took me out completely. I was in the lead. I said to him in the heat of the moment on the track, when we get back in, you're fucked, bro. Yeah. Stupid. Yeah, yeah. Angry. I was in the lead.
Yeah.
Anyway, come in. He's come up to me. I've given him a couple digs. He's fallen over. His older brother stepped to me and I beat his older brother up. And because I was in, you know, a helmet and heavy boots,
yeah,
the guy was like, you know, 19. And I still put him on his ass. And then 5 minutes later, his dad's come screaming around the corner with a claw hammer in his hand, screaming bloody murder. And if it wasn't for one of my friend's dads who jumped in front of him, and then another friend's dad and uncle who then tried to subdue him, I think someone would have been getting hit in the head with a hammer that day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, genuinely, and now I think of it, I mean, you know, I'd seen adults act violently towards children before that, but, and I'd experienced it personally.
But not with a claw hammer.
Not with a fucking claw hammer, bro. Like, he meant it, do you know what I mean? Like, and if it weren't for them two guys there, there would have been no one else in front of me.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, what the fuck am I supposed to do then?
Fucking dangerous world. Did either of your parents get scraps at the racing?
Well, only my mum was around. Mm. So, I mean, and my granddad as well. So
was she the driving force? Was she the
as a car racer himself as well. So, yeah, he was always the driving force. He took a lot of pleasure out of all of it. And, he funded everything. So if it wasn't for him, his guidance, keeping me strong, racing, funding it, taking me all across Europe, I was very blessed.
Are there any standout stories that you think would be, before we move on, that you really want to tell?
Standout stories.
I wouldn't mind one involving a gypsy. That'd be nice.
Okay, so here's a positive one.
Yeah.
So when I was growing up, like I said, there was a lot of travellers, a lot of gypsies, and you know the difference is there. And to be honest, I'm not going to name names or point any fingers in any directions of who I was with, but the people that I grew up with, when we got to know each other. Usually there was a scrap and then we became friends, which is a funny way of becoming friends.
No, it's quite common though.
And that happened. Yeah. So anyway, one day we're at this big racetrack and it's over a weekend and my friend said to me, do you want to come and watch my fight later? It's a boxing match. I said, yeah, cool. I knew that they were, you know, travellers and yeah, that was cool. I'd been to everywhere that we've been together. So we went back to his now estate where they lived. And as we drove in, it was the funniest thing ever. Well, it was like something out of the fucking Godfather. Everyone came out of their houses because everyone on this estate was travellers. They all come out and
housing estate, not
yeah, site. Yeah, housing yeah. estate. Yeah, yeah, everyone had moved, but yeah. to the same housing estate. So everyone had come out and waved because the guy's older brother, who was a couple years older than me, we wasn't racing in the same thing. Everyone knew he raced and everyone knew he was a fighter and you know they were well renowned, you know, they were a good family and everyone come out and was shaking everyone's hand as we turned up. And I'd never experienced that before. And that was extremely, you know, like almost humbling.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Like, wow, like shit.
What community?
Who am I with? Like as well. Like, everyone's come out to say hi and then within 15 minutes we're in the back of this sports hall behind some sort of establishment where there was a boxing match going on, which, you know, I knew quite a few people who were fighting and they were some cousin or some sort of relation. And everyone's either called, you know, Mickey, Joey.
Yeah. Yeah. Any John Joes?
I have met a John Joe. He was a wild guy.
Yeah.
And to be honest, yeah, we stayed, we watched this boxing match and, chilled out. Everyone was chilling on this estate and I didn't really realise that it was such a strange experience until a lot of years later because...
Yeah, because when you're young, you don't really take it in, you're understanding.
I mean, all of a sudden I'm with like, you know, I'm invited into this community where everyone's well respected. And I mean, you know, the people I met through racing dirt bikes, I mean, the experiences I had, positive and negative, but the people that I met and the people that took me in and showed me love, a traveling community, I was there for 5 minutes and all of a sudden, I mean, that was something really cool that I experienced.
Yeah,
I
bet.
You know, all the blood, sweat and tears, I could talk about that, but I mean, something special, that was special, you know what I mean?
Was it an outdoor fight they were having? Was it like a...
No, it was indoors. It resembled...
Could be an e-centre or
something. Yeah, almost. Almost. It was organised.
Was it a barn? Tell me it was a barn.
There was a bar there.
No, I mean barn.
Oh, barn.
But what was the building which the fight took place?
So sort of like You know, like, sort of, like, if you were to go to the back of the gyms at your old school.
Okay, right.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? But a big room.
Were all the women and girls, like, allowed to hang around there?
Yeah. It was a family event. It was a complete family event.
And you're taking absolute battering?
Everyone was involved, and there was kids fighting from the age of 7 all the way up to... Yeah. You know, 20 something. And
that sounds great. And some people will think that sounds barbaric, but I think, mate, if someone's culture is just fighting, exactly. Then, no one dies.
Do you know what? There was obviously a lot of respect for everyone in there because everyone shook hands.
Yeah.
And it was a really nice thing because everyone was involved. And there was no one getting leery or some bullshit. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, oh, fuck you, you want that. Yeah, that. It was
a good, clean, respectful fight.
It's part of growing up in that culture. Yeah, and yeah. I mean, it was part of growing up for me. As well, because not only, you know, was I allowed to go and see that, which was very rare, and be a part of it, and growing up I was involved in a lot of it as well, because racing bikes, I mean, that was something that I really liked, you know, something that I look back on and I think, that was kind of special.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, quickly, we haven't got long. Please listen to the all-new Angelo Sandberry podcast.
It's a funny one.
Oh, my God, it's hilarious. There's so much muck in it.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
By the age of about 13, I started writing graffiti. Although I was racing a lot, so I mean, graffiti was a secondary thing. I suppose I dipped my toe a little bit a couple of times. I got nicked when I was actually on a train. Luckily enough, when I got caught, they didn't see me doing anything. We actually used to get on the back of the train and we were out painting when we were going home and just catch tags on the insides on the way back. And we'd move from every carriage and try and do it, even though today, on the day, it was very packed. We were still doing it. So we made our way about 4 carriages up, and my mate goes, I'll go for a piss. I went, okay. As we're walking through, obviously, the cans are jingling in our bags. We didn't think too much of it. So my mate's gone in the toilet. Next thing you know, let me just mention one thing. I'm actually nursing a broken collarbone. It's only been broken for 2 weeks. I've had one treatment on it.
From motocross?
Yeah. Had a big crash. Big crash. Landed on my head, broke my collarbone. Luckily enough, it wasn't my neck. I was wearing a neck brace. Anyway, so I'm nursing this break. I'm okay. Still out fucking around. But, you know, it hurts a lot. And this guy's come up. Didn't see him. Grabbed the back of my neck. Grabbed my arm. Twisted my arm up to my neck. On the side of my broken collarbone, naturally didn't have a breath in my body. I just breathed out, so I couldn't shout. So I just made some weird noise, and I went down because it hurt so much. And he picked me back up, and then I shouted. Next thing you know, some guys run over, grabbed him, gone, "What the fuck are you doing? He's a kid, get off of him." And the guy's gone, "I'm police, British Transport Police, plain clothes." I think he's playing clothes. I'm like, shit. So he's grabbed me up and I'm banging on the door going, it's police out here, it's police out here. Knowing that my mate's stupid enough to catch a fucking tag in the toilet as we're going through catching tags. Anyway, the guy's grabbed me up again, throwing me up against the window again, saying he doesn't care. I'm lying about my collarbone. Next thing you know, some woman's come along on the phone. Turns out to be his missus, another copper. My mate's come out of the toilet. She's grabbed my mate, gone in there, seen the tags, grabbed him up. Next thing you know, they're on the phone saying, yeah, we're on this train, blah, 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 we're back on. They're like, right, we're taking you back to our seats. And we're like, the fuck? Like, they're grabbing us, right? They didn't have cuffs on them. So we're like, this is weird. This is really weird. But they'd see, they'd taken out the badges. Turns out these cunts were on the fucking way back from holiday. They had their fucking suitcases where they were sitting. They heard our cans jingling and just come and pressed us. They didn't know about the fucking tags in the last carriages, yeah? Wankers, mate. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Proper hurt me. Made us stay on the train all the way to the last stop where, lo and behold, they've shut two fucking platforms for two fucking young boys, early teens, and graffiti squad is waiting there. Rearrested, put in cuffs, thrown in the back of a van, yeah? And I'm like, trying to say, like, guys, like, this guy fucking hurt me. And they're going, stay silent. You've got the right to remain silent. And I'm like, fuck, whatever, innit? So, thrown in cells, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, they told me they called my mum. And I was like, okay. And then they taken me into a place to get strip searched. Luckily, they were like, I don't think there's a reason to strip search him. So they took me down to my pants because I was a minor. My mum wasn't there. I didn't have a legal representative. And as this is happening, the guy who's doing it is telling me that they've raided my house. He's like, your mates grassed you up. We know what you write. We've raided your house. We've got everything. We've got all the cans. We've got all the sketches. And I'm like, just didn't say nothing in it. I knew not to say nothing growing up.
Did you better say that at face value though? Do you believe them?
I believed them, yeah, bro. Yeah. Like, bro, I was hurt. I was fucking like young. Do you know what I mean? Like, I knew that I'd been doing something that I thought, fuck, they've got me for all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then I thought, shit, like, I've done a bit today. And then in my head, like, young boy, like, no one was being nice to me. I was being treated like shit. And it was like, okay. I just didn't say nothing, thinking my mum's going to get a lawyer. And then my mum turned up and they took me into the questioning room. Lo and behold, I was probably in the cells for like hours.
Mm.
I'm not even kidding. I was asking for water. They weren't bringing it to me. Like, it was weird.
Yeah.
And I knew something was off. Next thing you know, I'm in the room and the woman goes to me, we're going to take you out to your mum. Do you want us to provide you a lawyer? You will have to wait though. I said no. Went into the questioning room. No comment, no comment, no comment. Whatever. Come back out. We're not charging you with anything. We're giving you a caution that you were going equipped with articles to cause criminal damage.
Right.
Okay. Next thing you know, I can see my mum's not happy. She's like, really not happy. My mum fucking hates the police. Like I said, I grew up, had no respect for the fucking police.
Yeah.
I was always taught to fucking hate the police.
Yeah.
For good fucking reason.
It's Crime Club, you're fucking back to front.
Anyway, my mum managed to get all of my spray paint given back to me.
How? Yeah.
She fucking argued that I wasn't getting charged with anything and therefore the evidence was longer needed because I had no charge. It was a caution. And the constable at the time behind the big desk literally couldn't say nothing. So I got all my shit back in a big fucking British Transport Police see-through evidence bag. Stopped writing illegal graffiti seriously for quite a few years. I mean, obviously, that put me off a little bit.
Yeah, of course,
and then
yeah.
Not long after that, I knew people who were getting nicked and then people who were looking at jail time through affiliation, stuff like that. And, you know, that was around the time, it wasn't long after had been put away, you know, and they had one of the
biggest crew.
Yeah, big crew. One of the biggest crews. They got put away. A lot of people were going down a couple years later. A big, big case went down. Vamp. You know,
yeah, but
so in this time, I wasn't really painting graffiti at all. I was focusing on racing. Later on, I made the decision to stop racing, focus on art. And I realised that graffiti is more of a part of art for making art for me than anything. So graffiti is like an outlet. Graffiti is part of my process and to live. Like, I don't see it as, it's a hobby. Like, it's been so much a part of my life that, you know, without graffiti, I wouldn't be able to do artwork, you know. Going to uni wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for graffiti. And I think that the mentality of growing up racing bikes and dealing with facing, you know, being crippled or dying, like, it wasn't like, oh yeah, you know, I always knew about graffiti. And then when I got older, I got into it properly and I met a lot more serious people and I got invited to do a lot more serious things.
Yeah.
And I done them. And I don't think if I wouldn't have had that mentality for racing, you know. And like, I think in graffiti, like, you've got one catalyst, which is anyone who paints graffiti is not your normal type of person.
Yeah.
They're just not. Whether they're fucking crazy, whether they're seriously dialed in and they know their shit, they're just not your average guy.
Do you reckon there's something to do with maybe just, well, I kind of see graffiti as like basically a statement against the status quo. It's quite, or vaguely, it's like, I don't like this and I'm not being part of it.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's definitely a major aspect of it. I don't think anyone who paints graffiti doesn't have that sort of fuck the police, fuck the system attitude. Because, I mean, real graffiti is like full contact, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you've got to be willing to risk your freedom and your life. In a lot of cases, you know, graffiti's a very dangerous thing. You know, you need to have that sort of fuck you mentality in a way, because I think for me, like, it was just a natural progression in my life. The fact that racing wasn't there, it was like I needed something else.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
do you know
yeah.
what I mean? I grew up with high intensity, dangerous environment.
Because it's another adrenaline kind of activity.
Exactly, exactly. And I mean, like I said, I grew up having an aversion to authority. Mm. So all of a sudden, I've got this place, like I said, I didn't really fit in because I wasn't at school much. You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden, I get older, I get more into art, less into racing, and find my people in graffiti.
Yeah.
This is where I see myself. This is where I recognise aspects of myself in people, and in a lot of aspects in life I didn't. So, like I said, it was just a natural progression. And recognizing myself in graffiti and recognizing graffiti's place in my life for being an art form and an outlet, a form of therapy, a form of, you know, expression in its most basic way. You know, a lot of people hate it, and you know, I think that just comes down to, you know, a lack of empathy, to be honest. Because if you can't recognise what it takes to be able to climb up onto the train tracks, risk your fucking life against how many thousands of volts, and do something on your own that maybe no one will see, maybe no one will read it.
Yeah.
You know, that. I mean, it's that type of mentality. If people don't like it, you know, people need to just think about what it's like to actually be in someone else's shoes. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, certainly.
And I think, yeah, you know, there's a lot of outcasts in graffiti, and it's a home and a comfort for a lot of people. And everyone does it for a different reason, but you know, it's part of life. I mean, it's part of breathing. You know, as long as I'm alive, it will be a part of my life in one way or another.
Yeah, you see yourself still doing it in years to come.
100%. I mean, just like racing, just like bikes. Do you know what I mean? Like, I will always want to throw my leg over a bike. I will always want to go and catch a tag. And I think it's gonna be a fucked up club. Wrong and telling tales of so much stuff. It's not the kind of club they have at home. Oh, no, no, no. It's a crime club.
So there, I thought that Mick's view of graffiti might provide a nice measured counterpoint to Belinda's thoughts. What he also illustrates is how graffiti is the mutual interest of so many outsiders, and typically the outsiders that go on to live lives outside the law. Honestly, they're all at it at one stage or another. What they aren't all at, though, is riding motorbikes at the age of 10 and nearly getting their head caved in by grown men wielding metal. Thanks again to Moto Mick. Lovely chat. Buy a Crime Club tank top, you swine. I have, up to this point, provided you with over 8 hours of Crime Club content. Buy a tank top if you can afford it. Christ knows I can't. They are at podcastmerch.co.uk, amongst other less offensive items. Don't know what's on next week. Something, though. Cheers.
Crime Club.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Fear of missing out, fear of going out, fear of flying, fear of dying, imposter syndrome, spiders, pipes from Ghostwatch, dolls with buttons for eyes. We're all scared of something, but what are you scared of? Join me, Sarah Morgan, for The Fear, a podcast about the overlap between comedy and horror. The secret lemonade drinker adverts. Geese. That time on Biker Grove when Ag McParlin got shot in the face with a paintball. In each episode, I interview funny, interesting people I like. People like Phil Jupitus, Alice Lowe, Richard Osman, Riley Silverman, Danielle Ward. About their biggest fears in a judgment-free environment. It is spooktacular.
The Fear.
And remember, do have nightmares because they're an entirely appropriate response to the horrors of modern living.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.